sure, you can cry that, oh, it's not like YouTube on TikTok. But you know what? The platforms are going to do what they're going to do to be the best for their audiences, to drive the most views, to drive the most revenue, to drive the most growth. And you as a creator should stop thinking, oh, everybody needs to be like YouTube. But what you really should be thinking about is looking at the platforms not as your core sense, part of your revenue stream, but as the core part of your discovery stream. And you should use those platforms to bind top community people to you and then move them to something you own so you can monetize it on your own platform.
Hey there, welcome back to the Video Entrepreneur Podcast powered by Uscreen.tv. It's me again, Rob Balasabas, Head of Partnerships here at Uscreen. I hope you're enjoying our conversations with video creators, experts, and entrepreneurs every single week. And if you are, we would love for you to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcasting platform or over on our YouTube channel where we have our video podcast as well. That'll go a long way in helping get this content out to other creators like yourself. In this episode, we have not one, but two amazing people joining me today. First, we have our founder and CEO of Uscreen, PJ, who's going to be joining me as a co-host today. And we're going to be catching up with him and what he's excited about in the world of Uscreen in 2022 and beyond. And our special guest, Jim Lauterbach, is here to talk about trends in the creator economy, as well as the latest scoop on TikTok, YouTube, and all the different video platforms. Jim Lauterbach is among the most respected figures in digital media with a 20-year history of leadership at the intersection of digital media, experiential events, and technology. Today, Jim runs VidCon as an independent division of Viacom CBS. He's also a venture partner and a sought-after speaker, among many things. So without further ado, let's talk to PJ and Jim. All right. Hey, PJ, welcome back to the podcast, I guess. I know this is your podcast, but I've been kind of co-hosting the last few episodes. But happy 2022, even though it's already February.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks, Rob. You've been doing great on this podcast. It's actually the company's podcast, and you've been doing an awesome job really taking it over. So thanks for that. And I'm really excited about all the guests you're having. So thanks for having me on board.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we bring our special guest on today, anything, you know, very exciting, special for you in 2022 that you want to share with the listeners and the viewers out there?
Yeah, a lot of good stuff happening within the creator economy, right? And we're so happy to be right in the middle of it, really empowering the creators. And our guest today is really an expert, and he's had a long history of just being in the creator economy, content creation. So it really is a pleasure to have Jim and hear his feedback on a lot of what's happening in the industry, his viewpoints, where things are going. So really excited to talk to Jim.
Amazing. Well, without further ado, let's bring Jim on and let's just have this conversation. So Jim Lauterbach, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks. And it's great to be here. PJ, it's great to see you virtually. Looking forward to when we can actually do it face to face, but thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Excited to talk to you. Yeah. Yeah. All right. I know that we did a bit of an introduction of you, Jim, but maybe probably best in your own words, kind of a bit of your background and, you know, what you're doing now with VidCon and everything and, you know, all the creators, and just a little introduction from yourself to our audience.
Sure. Yeah. So I'm Jim. Background, long time in media in general, starting in magazines and online video, and worked and ran an online video startup called Revision 3, which is an early MCN. In the YouTube space, we started about 2007, sold that to Discovery in 2012. Was at Discovery for a while and had been working with VidCon as a speaker, as sort of a sponsor, and definitely as a as an advisor for a while. And in late 2014, started working with them, first helping to build the industry track and then taking over as CEO and led the sale of VidCon to Viacom CBS, which is where we are now. So we've been taking VidCon around the world. If you don't know VidCon, leave right now, go find out, buy a ticket. We're the biggest collection of online video events, festivals, summits, and conferences about community-first media and online video. And we're all around the world, but our next big event in the U.S. is the third week of June in Anaheim, where we usually are, and we will be back.
It's like the mecca for creators, isn't it, VidCon? So, yeah, no, that's awesome. Very good. Awesome. Well, let's dive right into things. Jim, you know, we really enjoyed your reaction piece on LinkedIn to Hank Green's TikTok sucks video. And so maybe from your own words, let's start with that. You know, what's your thoughts on sort of Hank Green's point of view on TikTok and YouTube and monetization for creators? And what are some of the more broader trends that you're seeing in the creator economy in, you know, this year and beyond?
Well, yeah, and some of the topics around that. I mean, I think when Hank, as if you don't know Hank Green, he's OG YouTube, been on YouTube since 2005, 2006, 2007, something like that, with the Vlogbrothers and then his own thing, and built a great, great, great business on the backs of YouTube and everything from AdSense and sponsorships in his YouTube videos to, at one point, YouTube actually gave him a chunk of money along with about 100 other people to launch new channels, and I believe that's how he launched SciShow and Crash Course. And Hank, as a lot of creators do, has been working on other platforms as well, Instagram and TikTok, and dabbling in Snap and other places. And his video was very much part of a trend of a bunch of people being transparent about how much they were getting paid on YouTube and on TikTok. And in many ways, the, you know, dollars or cents per view that Hank saw on TikTok, just like other people, like Mr. Beast and others, is a lot less than on YouTube. And so he came out and said, you know, hey, this is a problem. I get paid for more views on YouTube than I do on TikTok. And then talked a little bit about the creator funds that we're starting to see across a lot of the platforms, but specifically around how TikTok, as TikTok grew bigger, the payments, and he's in the fund, he would get less for it. So he, and Hank has done this to a lot of different platforms, as when he has issues with platforms monetization or other things, he's very vocal about it. And one of the things we all love about Hank is he is a creator advocate first. And so a lot of what he did in his video about TikTok was to be very creator advocate first. So that is just a quick recap. I mean, Hank could do a lot better than me, and I did not all the salient points, but I think those are generally his theses, whatever.
Yeah. And you put out sort of a reaction piece on LinkedIn in your, you know, LinkedIn newsletter, and just kind of summarize that and your thoughts, from Hank Green's video and, sort of your message to creators.
Well, I think the broader issue for me is, and this kind of crystallized around, we did VidCon in Abu Dhabi in December, and TikTok came and talked there, and they laid out their vision for TikTok, talking about the content graph, which means when you use TikTok, you know this, it learns what you like and it keeps feeding you more of what you like. TikTok, the way I see it, and the way it's designed, which is entirely fine, although creators are a big part of it, it is a content-first platform. It's designed to feed you the content you like, whether it's beauty content or book content or DIY content, or maybe you just like content about sea shanties. If you do, TikTok learns that and gives you more. Whereas YouTube is very much of, and it was grown up as, a creator first platform. It has a creator graph. It knows the creators you like. It feeds you more from those creators. It feeds you more creators like those creators to get you to watch more video on YouTube. Now, that is fine, but if you think about YouTube, YouTube with shorts is now being more like TikTok. Mm-hmm. Shorts is very much of a content-first platform, not necessarily as creator-first as core YouTube. And you see this on other platforms as well. As they emulate or ape or copy TikTok, they end up becoming more focused on feeding you better content algorithmically that feeds into the content it thinks you like, rather than thinking about creators. So I think the overall trend here is that these platforms are getting more focused on feeding you content, less focused on feeding you or deepening or growing the relationship between you as a creator and the audience, the communities that are there. And that, yes, TikTok may be in the forefront of this, and its success has been amazing, mm-hmm. right? But all the platforms are moving to that. And if you're a creator, sure, you can cry that, it's not like YouTube on TikTok. But you know what? The platforms are going to do what they're going to do to be the best for their audiences, to drive the most views, to drive the most revenue, to drive the most growth. And you as a creator should stop thinking, everybody needs to be like YouTube, and more start thinking about yourself as a direct-to-consumer brand. And as the platforms change, figure out how you as a creator can leverage those platforms to build the best business for you as a creator. And to me, that means, yeah, you can do great stuff on YouTube and TikTok and Snap and Insta and all those places, and they're going to pay you some money. But what you really should be thinking about is looking at the platforms not as your core part of your revenue stream, but as the core part of your discovery stream. And you should use those platforms to bind top community people to you and then move them to something you own so you can monetize it on your own platform.
Nice. So, Jim, you're speaking to the right guys here then. So I love what
you... Yeah, I mean, you guys get this totally. That's what you do.
And, you know, just speaking of this with what you brought up in general, marketing, right? Awareness, top of the funnel, bring and nurture people down. But you're saying this from a perspective of just how creators should be thinking of their business long term, is create your following, build your awareness, create your brand on these big channels, distribution mediums, your YouTubes, your TikToks, your Instagrams, all these different platforms, and then eventually trickle them down and own that audience and be able to monetize properly with however you build that platform that you end up owning that audience on, which makes total sense. Now, we are seeing a lot of different forms of monetization on these big platforms that we're talking about at the top, right? TikTok, their creator fund, their monetization, as well as YouTube. But what you're saying is it's not enough, right? And it can change at any moment. How would you comment on that? Because those platforms are putting a lot of enforcement and helping monetize. Is it just not enough?
First of all, yes, they are, because the platforms know that they need you as a creator. And they're adding new things to the mix that you can take advantage of. But remember, the platforms don't exist to serve you as a creator. They exist to make money for their shareholders, and they will continue to do what's right for them as platforms. So think about YouTube demonetization, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Everything's going along just fine. All of a sudden, your views drop, your revenue drops. For some reason, it's out of your control. If you're all on YouTube, that can be a very difficult thing. But if you think about your revenue mix as some YouTube, some TikTok, some this, maybe Patreon, maybe it's tokenized communities like Rally, maybe it's stuff that you do yourselves, maybe it's stuff that you're getting from a deep connection with a brand, maybe it's an additional stuff that you're doing around your merch line or your beauty line, your makeup line. All those things are your revenue mix, and you need as a creator to think about those revenue mixes. I will say, so one interesting thing that sort of came out as a, I don't know, it's like maybe it was the next week, but both Instagram and TikTok started, news reports came out that they were experimenting with subscriptions. So you could build a community on TikTok and then you could sell subscriptions to them. And then you got some direct money from your fans. You didn't even need to go to Discord or go to Patreon or go somewhere else to do that. That's really good. By the way, I commend both those platforms for looking into that. And I commend YouTube for all the work they're doing. But again, you exist at the sufferance of the platforms. And let's say, and I don't know the answer to this, and I'd love to know the answer to this. Let's say you do a TikTok subscription, right? And you've got 1,000 people that are subscribing for $1 a month. Great. Awesome. You know what? But what happens if you decide next week that you want to move all 1,000 of them, or as many as possible, over to your new Discord community, because Discord's offering subscriptions and you think you'd do a better job over there? Will TikTok let you do that? Will they give you direct connections to your audience to be able to talk to them about moving them? Do you own the audience, or does TikTok own the audience? Does Instagram own the audience, or do you own the audience? And like I said, I don't know the answer, but fundamentally on these platforms, they own your audience and you have a relationship with them, but you can't talk to them directly. So is that going to change? How's it going to change? I don't know, but I hope the platforms give creators a better ownership of their audience. So if they do decide to do something on, say, Discord or Patreon or Rally or Roll or somewhere else, they can do that by talking directly to their audience. To me, that's the fun. The core that it comes down to is, do you own the relationship, the connection, the communication with your top fans, whether it's top 10%, 5%, 20%, whatever, because those are the ones in the end that you can leverage through whether it's subscriptions on TikTok or your own thing off platform.
Yeah, great advice there, Jim. I love the way you put that, that the platforms own the audience. You just have a relationship with them. It couldn't be more true, right? You can't even get access to emails from almost all the platforms that, or all of the platforms that you listed. So you can't even contact them directly. It's amazing, right? How deep creators have gotten into these ecosystems and subscriber numbers and audience size and so forth, and they don't even have access to the data. The only way is to nurture that audience down to some type of monetization outside of those platforms. Like you said, the platforms are aware of it. Maybe they will address it, but still, is there enough funds to go around, and how much of that audience will you own? So I love your take on that.
Well, and this is one of the reasons why we see a rise of link and bio companies, right? Like whether it's Linktree or Koji or others, because you get one link in Instagram, you get one link in TikTok, and you better link to something that's powerful that'll drive people to maybe something you own or somewhere else. And so it's kind of sad that that's the only way that you can communicate with your audience is with that one link and send them places, but that's the way it is. So I think the ultimate here is if you're a creator and you really want to make a business of it, think of yourself as a small business owner, an entrepreneur. Look at your revenue mix, look at your customer acquisition costs, look at the things that you're driving people towards and figure out what the most profitable aspect of your revenue mix is, and then intelligently try to move people from the less profitable part of your revenue mix to the more profitable part of your revenue mix. I know it sounds complicated and difficult, but there's also a difference between I'm a creator and it's a hobby and I'm a creator and this is my life.
Yeah, great input. Love that, Jim. That was very informative on the owning the audience part of platforms is just key, especially if you're building a business, right? And a lot of creators, they get into this just kind of building a following and having some fun, and then it turns into something. The audiences grow, especially with platforms like TikTok. I mean, Hank Green's been on YouTube for a while, and he's got 600,000 followers. He has 6 million on TikTok, right? And then he just showed how much money he was making, and it was just, it was unbelievable. So,
but here's the value that Hank got for being on TikTok. Yeah, he didn't make as much money maybe per view or per viewer or subscriber or whatever on TikTok, but he reached 6 million people, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a boatload of people, but what did you do with it, Hank? And I say that to Hank. I know he did a lot of great stuff with it, so not really calling Hank out here, just using it as an example. It's like, if you have 6 million followers, fans, whatever, and you're getting 50, 100,000 views per video you post on TikTok, there's value in that. But the value might not lie as much in TikTok directly as being able to leverage all those people and maybe moving them towards a brand deal or moving them towards a merch or moving them towards something else.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point, Jim. I was listening to Colin and Samir and also MKBHD talking about content creation versus content distribution. And I think that is sort of the fine line, I think, with really successful content creators that are able to build a business when, yes, you have to be a good content creator. You need to know how to draw attention and, you know, keep attention and create good content, storytelling, all of those aspects as a content creator. But then if you want to be a full-time content creator, you need to then wear the hat of a content distributor. Is that what you see as well out there with the successful full-time media company content creators?
Yeah, content distributor is definitely a big part of it, but it's also leveraging your community to drive things beyond just content consumption. And so you look at a big media company, like we're part of a big media company now. And yes, we do a great job on distributing content around the world, whether it's on Paramount Plus or on our TV channels or whatever, but we also have a big licensing arm, right? So if you go to like a Walmart, you're gonna see, you know, That Girl Lele and SpongeBob and other things that you can buy with the IP on that. And I don't know what percent of that aspect of it is compared to the rest, but it's, you know, it's significant. Same thing happens that you have to think about. What are the things that you can leverage your biggest fans to get them to spend money with you directly? To support what you're doing, along with being able to make money in all the places where you distribute your content. And I just want to, like, one last thing that's like, the The title of Hank's video is unfortunate, right? TikTok doesn't suck. TikTok does things differently than YouTube. The opportunities there are different. But if you, the other thing that this also frosts me when I think about YouTube versus TikTok and old, you know, OG creators on YouTube being upset about TikTok. When you look at a video that someone posts on YouTube, on average, I don't have those stats in front of me, but I'll ask guys, how long do you think it takes someone who posts their average 5 to 20 minute video? How many hours do you think it takes them to produce, edit, record, tweak, post? How long do you think that takes?
Let's say 5, 10 hours, you know?
Yeah, I think initially, especially, it can take longer, but then it, yeah, I think it gets to 5, 10 hours. Yeah.
Yeah, and let's say it's 10 hours, 5, 10 hours, and you need to post 3 or 4 a week. That's a lot of time. Now, how long do you think it takes you to post a TikTok?
A bit shorter. It depends on the type of video, right? If it's scripted, a lot shorter, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing about TikTok is the tools that are there make it so easy for you to create and post and put up, which is why we see so many people building channels there, building followers. It's just a lot easier to do, and it takes less time. I mean, yes, you can go produce, and you can spend all this time. You can storyboard out, and you can do it. But you know, a lot of people are just doing stuff in an hour. And so I'm not saying the effort is less. The creativity is just as important. But there is something a little bit different about a TikTok video that, you know, we can't – we just shouldn't look at them as the same. We should just look at them as part of our – distribution network, as you said so succinctly, Rob.
Yeah, I like what you said earlier. It's just looking at the platforms and differentiating revenue streams or different revenue streams versus discovery streams. I think TikTok, for a lot of creators, falls into the discovery stream if you're a YouTuber. And a lot of YouTuber I know are trying to, you know, use TikTok and leverage the views and the attention on TikTok to drive them to YouTube. For right or wrong, whether that's, you know, the right way to use it or not, depends on the creator, isn't it? Like, depends on your business model and what you're trying to do. Do you make most of your money on sponsorships versus, you know, affiliates versus views, you know? So, yeah, the revenue and discovery stream, you know, I like what you said there earlier.
Yeah, think about it like this. You guys are in D.C. You're going down 95 on your way to, you know, to North Carolina or something like that. There are billboards up there. That billboard is about discovery. Mm-hmm. Remember when, have you ever seen a QR code on a billboard? It's kind of stupid. There you are driving, like, oh, I'm going to get that QR code. But it lets you know about stuff that exists, and maybe you'll go look for it on the web when you park, or, you know, maybe you go into a store and that thing that billboard was promoting, you see it in the store and you're like, I'm buying that now. TikTok's a billboard for many people, and there's nothing wrong with a billboard. Billboards are expensive, but they work. There's also nothing wrong with going into a store and seeing a bunch of product on a shelf and an ad right there, an end cap on the store shelf, just shows it off, tries to get you to buy it. YouTube's kind of more like the end cap in many ways, and TikTok's more like a billboard. They're both parts of your marketing mix and your revenue generating mix. You just need to look at them that way. And I'm not saying it's not as cut and dried as I just said, because, you know, it's a continuum as well. But you need to not think of every platform as wanting to be the same for you as a creator.
Right, right, absolutely. So I guess in reality then, TikTok doesn't suck, you know, as, depending, even if Hank Green's title is like that, it doesn't actually suck because there is a lot of benefits for creators on TikTok. There's lots of really successful creators on TikTok as well. But curious, Jim, like right being in the middle of it, what are your thoughts on the creators that are doing really well on TikTok and those that struggle to monetize that attention, the views, and the audience that they're building there?
Well, you know, look at somebody like, I mean, look at the D'Amelios, yep. Right? I mean, they built the whole D'Amelio empire around what they do. But even like, look at Khaby Lame, who's, you know, number two up there, who's starting to take advantage of it. He just announced a long-term deal with Boss, and so, Bass, sorry, not Boss, Bass, Hugo Bass. And going to be doing a ton of stuff there, and I don't know what the financials are, but I hope, and I'm sure they're really good. And so the people who are going out and doing, whether it's music with Bella Poarch or it's fashion partnerships or it's, you know, reality TV shows and everything else that D'Amelio's doing, I'm actually drinking Dunkin' Donuts coffee.
It's so working.
Thank you very much. It's working. I've been a Dunkin' Donuts coffee drinker since I was like 10 years old in Boston. So, but that's neither here nor there. But they're the ones who are really looking at how to take advantage of it, and are, I think, are the ones who are doing a really good job at it. And what do you want to do? And how do you want to do it? And what are you passionate about? And can you build an audience that helps you monetize what you're passionate about? And how do you do it differently on different platforms? That's, to me, is the way to think about it.
Yeah, I love that. That's great input. The ability to really build a following and then be able to monetize your passion is, you know, kind of what inspires so many people. And you said it best, like with Hank, you look at 6 million people he's able to reach with his information and his views. And that's just amazing. How else can you get in front of 6 million people? It really is a billboard. That was well said. And it's just, it's fast. It's hard to capture attention with so many content creators coming out there. And that's one thing Hank said, as more creators come on board and there's more content, the more diluted everything gets, right? Especially he was referring to monetization, but possibly it could be the attention span as well. And it could just be all the content loops that are kind of the AI is built for you. And we see that on YouTube. There's so many types of videos. There's so many content creators out there, but there's also a video and a niche for everyone. And that's the beauty of YouTube. You create content and it's evergreen. So what, I'm curious on your thoughts on that. Like, I actually launched, I think, a half a dozen videos on my own channel, and it was all around kind of monetization and OTT. And then I kind of dropped off and didn't upload anymore. I'm going to jump back in there again soon, but it's evergreen. And one of the videos has 12,000 views. The other ones have 4,000 or 5,000. I haven't uploaded a video for a year, Jim, and I didn't do anything with the first six. I created some content in a very basic home office, and it constantly is evergreen. When you create videos on TikTok, are they evergreen like that, or no? It's fresh ones that are constantly in the loop.
Getting pushed out.
It's a good question. I don't know enough about TikTok to be intelligent on that question, as far as their library of content. I've got to assume it's more temporal because it's very trends-based. It's very hashtag-based. But I don't know. And that's, I wish that we had better access to the analytics of TikTok than we do right now. But I think and hope that will come. I do think that, you know, the context of viewing for YouTube and TikTok is different today, whereas YouTube can be more of a, like, lean in, longer sessions, longer video, find things that, like you said, about, you know, VOD and other things that you were talking about. Whereas TikTok can be more ephemeral. I've got time. Let me see what's going on. Suck me in for 45 minutes or an hour. But I wonder, and I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on this, but I wonder, as TikTok moves more towards television, because they've got a television app that they're doing. I haven't looked at it yet. I've got to load it up on my TV. But, you know, they had a deal that they did where you can see TikToks in restaurants and bars. Will it change the viewership dynamic of TikTok? And will it allow people to go deeper on things and to be able to have a good search? Like, YouTube's got a really good search. TikTok's got search. It's not the best. But, you know... like, I was trying to find smashed Brussels sprouts to find the first smashed Brussels sprouts recipe. Remember when smashed Brussels sprouts was a thing? If you look at my, I actually wrote about this in today's newsletter about how TikTok owns trends worldwide, globally. But if you think about, and I wanted to link to the first person who put up the smashed Brussels sprout recipe as an example of how they own food. It was really hard to find. And I had to go to YouTube, I had to go to Google to find it. And so, you know, that, but over time, do they do a better job with that? Does it become a repository versus just an ephemeral entertainment medium? I don't know. But we'll see. I don't know.
Yeah. The part that you just hesitated at the end, you're like, I don't know. I doubt it. I felt like you were going to say is one of the things that makes platforms so successful is they focus on very specific things. That's the thing with technology, right? Every software has a very specific use case and expertise that it follows. And it's really hard to build software, you know, and I see that. And you look at Instagram, you're like, they haven't changed anything in forever. But everything is so meticulously placed and tested, and it's the same, you know, as you're saying for TikTok. So these issues they're aware of, or these, you know, opinions that we're saying they're aware of, I'm sure. How much can they change? We don't know, because.
Well, and do you want to change? Exactly. If you have a great audience and it's growing dramatically, do you want to change? I will say, though, that if you look at YouTube, for example, it is now many things mm-hmm. to many people, right?
Yeah.
It's also, what, over 15 years old. Same thing with Amazon. They're the everything store. It started with books. Now you can buy everything there. So there is an argument that there is a place for the everything thing, but it doesn't mean that those sort of core go into a niche players don't exist and there's no space for them. TikTok's a great example. Snap's a great example. LinkedIn is a great example of places that are core to what they do, and they're not trying to be everything for everybody, and that's okay.
Yeah, I think it is a little confusing, and sometimes I think frustrating for content creators, because all of these platforms do have similar features. Like TikTok started as a short form, but now they're extending the videos that you can upload there to like 5 minutes mm-hmm. and like longer. Same thing with YouTube. Now it's going from long form to also vertical shorts, right? And man, we're not even talking about the audio space, you know, Clubhouse, and now there's Twitter Spaces, and LinkedIn has audio rooms. Like, as a content creator, you have all these things coming at you. And I think sometimes that is, there's the opportunities are immense, right? You can build pretty much, as long as you have a strategy, you can build a business. But then also the options for content creators on where to post and what to create, that can be very exhausting, right? And
yeah, it's exhausting to be a creator right now. I mean, there are new tools and new companies that are trying to help that out, whether it's someone like Jelly Smack that is making it easier for certain people to take content they do for YouTube and distribute it other places. I think we'll see other people helping with that as well, to, you know, Stir and Pearpop and others who are really trying to help. But it's tough. And again, it's where being able to look at your numbers, being able to see where the best revenue per effort comes from. It's actually revenue per effort, per post, per this, per that. Where does the best revenue mix come from? Where do your customers come from? And how do you lean into that? And, you know, it's interesting that we've got Tubular and we've got TubeBuddy and we've got vidIQ. A lot of good data there. I wonder if there's an opportunity for somebody to do a creator-centric data platform where they pull all this stuff in, you know, the platforms, the direct-to-consumer stuff that you can do with Patreon and Discord and other places and the other things, and summarize it for you so you can start to look at those patterns and really easily dive into where should you be spending your time as a creator.
That's a million-dollar question, I think. Multi-million-dollar questions, probably, right? Where should I spend my time as a creator?
Yeah.
Hey, PJ, I don't know, just for the sake of time, do you want to sort of wrap it up? We'll probably need to do a part two with Jim at some point, but just to keep it, you know, within the boundaries of the time for the podcast. And I know there's some things we want to talk about maybe with VidCon just before we let Jim go.
Jim, I'd love to kind of to sum it up. What are your predictions for the future of the creator economy? Things are moving so fast in the last few years, right? They've been accelerated by COVID, but what's the future look like?
I think the future is really bright. Anybody, you know, that we remain in a world where anybody can wake up tomorrow with no followers, no friends, no fans, no subscribers, no views, and start on a platform, many platforms, and build that up themselves and be able to make a life for themselves out of it. So, you know, you look at somebody like Airrack, who came and has built lots of great stuff, and first YouTube and then TikTok, and now he just raised money for his new creator course school, movie making, whatever thing. It's like, yes, you can do that. So the opportunities for creators continue to be amazing. Creators are becoming more and more in control. Even when the brand creator balance of power is shifting, brands used to be way up here and creators were down here. And now creators are more and more at the same level or even able to dictate that they want to do to brands, and brands are further down. So I think we'll continue to see the power of creators ascend. I think we'll continue to see new, great, amazing creators on this community-first platform start to build audiences, I think we will see even more of a shift to global, where creators can look beyond just being in their country of origin, using smart companies that will allow them to transcribe, translate, whatever. They can build audiences globally around the world. And I think we'll see more ways for creators to hopefully more easily and more profitably turn themselves into direct-to-consumer businesses. And then I think we'll see great ways for creators to take the communities and the things that they've built and the connections they have and turn them into businesses that don't have anything to do with what they're doing in video. So whether it's energy drinks or some of the other stuff, there's a lot of great examples we're seeing. I mean, Emma Chamberlain is now a coffee magnate. All those things and more are opportunities we're going to see develop even further over the next year or two.
Amazing. Amazing. Awesome. Jim, really excited to have had you here. I think the insight you have is valuable, especially for the creators that are listening. And clearly, we're all very excited about their creator economy and what's happening very soon. So sort of on that note, a great place to be celebrating creators is VidCon. And so maybe just take a moment and just let our creators that are listening or watching know how to plug into VidCon or attend one of the upcoming events. What's the best place to do that?
Sure. Well, head to vidcon.com and you'll see when the events are. We're doing Anaheim, California. Like I said, it's the third week of June. You can show up as a fan, hang out with your favorite creators, see everything that's there. Creator Track is probably the best mix of information and money spent. So, and that's where you can learn and meet other creators, learn from top creators, learn how to grow your audience and all the stuff we're talking about. And then you're really building a business and want to talk to the business leaders. The industry track there makes a lot of sense. We're doing events around the world this year as well. So Mexico, Asia, and Singapore, and Sao Paulo, and many more to come. Stay tuned for that. I would encourage you to, if you can, head over to my LinkedIn, Jim Louderback, J-L-O-U-D-E-R-B, J Louderby. Sign up for my Inside the Creator Economy newsletter, because keep up to date on all this stuff and have a little bit of fun too. So happy to see, hopefully, people listening here. See you at one of our events or one of the other events that are growing up around the world about the creator economy and how we're all building this new world.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Jim. Thank you so much, PJ. And thank you for listening. And we'll see you all in the next episode.
Thank you. Thanks, yep. Jim.
Thanks, guys.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you've gone this far, can I ask you for a quick favor? Would you be kind enough to give us a review on Apple Podcasts? Because that would be so awesome. Again, that will really help this podcast get out to other creators just like yourself. And again, if you want to learn more about Uscreen for your own business, or maybe you want to join our affiliate partner program, head over to uscreen.link/podcast to get more information. And I'll see you in the next episode.